It was in the 60s when someone told me, "You are what you eat." It was meant as advice, but I wasn't sure how to apply it. Since then, corporation-driven scientists have been messing about with our food, modifying its genetic composition. If we are what we eat, and we're eating GM foods, what is known about the impact on our bodies? To explore this question, I'm joined in the studio by Pat Howard. She is a professor in the communications department at Simon Fraser University and teaches courses on risk communication, especially the risks posed by genetic engineering of our food. Good morning, Pat, and welcome to the studio.
Morning, Mort.
Some aspects of genetic engineering have received more kind of publicity discussion, monoculture, the danger that poses, increased use of pesticides required with genetically engineered crops, corporate monopolization, etc. But how much serious scientific research has been done into the impact of eating GM foods on people?
I think most people assume that there must be government scientists in the regulatory agencies sitting in laboratories testing all the food that's been released, all the crops that are being grown in the fields. And this is incorrect. The reality is that the scientists read reports that are submitted to them by the biotech companies. They're told that this information is confidential business information, which makes the regulatory process not transparent. Other scientists, independent scientists, scientists sitting in the universities or whatever, cannot read those reports that are coming from the companies because it's confidential, right? So there have been problems. Some of the regulatory scientists reading the reports, reading the studies that have been submitted, have been dissatisfied with what they've seen. They've been concerned, and they've protested approvals granted by both Canada and the U.S. to some of these new genetically modified organisms that have been released into the environment and we're now consuming. Some people may remember, some of your listeners, back in about 1998 when scientists at Health Canada, there were whistleblowers who complained because Monsanto had actually offered a bribe and they were getting pressure from authorities in Health Canada to approve bovine growth hormone for use on cows, a genetically engineered drug, and that's just one example of that kind of protest. The Royal Society in Canada put together an expert panel of scientists at the request of the Canadian government to assess the regulatory process in Canada, and they came back and said that there wasn't a regulatory process, that there was no adequate safety testing. The whole process was not transparent, and therefore they couldn't say that it was safe on the basis of what was actually available to them, and they called for independent safety testing and more funding of the safety assessment process. So some of the safety testing that should have occurred before the foods were released and approved is now starting to happen. And so some of it has been out there for 5, even 10 years, and now we're beginning to see some results from independent testing that's been done in Japan, Brazil, Mexico, France, Belgium, Britain, Scotland, Australia. Not very much, though, in North America.
And why is the difference between some research being done in those countries that you mentioned, Europe for one, but not in North America?
Well, what's happening is we are discovering that there are negative effects in animal feeding studies. And this is not what we've been told before. We've been told these are thoroughly tested and that there's nothing to worry about. There's no evidence of any harm. Actually, the first protests from regulatory scientists occurred in 1994 when the Food and Drug Administration approved the first genetically modified crop, which was something called Flavor Saver tomato. And the basis for their objections were lesions found in the stomachs of the rats. And that we actually heard about, but we heard that there was some kind of controversy. Now you can actually read the scientists' memos from the Food and Drug Administration, which are up and available on the internet through an organization called Biointegrity.
Now, if we go through the process, we start with a natural product and it's genetically engineered, then we go through testing that on animals on these independent studies, and then we can look at people. So what happens, how reliable, how predictable is the simple process of, simple in concept, of genetically modifying a food organism, changing one gene for another, etc.?
I think the model of molecular biology that informs genetic engineering is actually out of date, that it doesn't reflect the fact that genomes are fluid, that cells respond to the foreign DNA coming into them, that they that research in France and Belgium has actually turned up the fact that the transgenic lines appear to be unstable, that the description of the transformation that had occurred in the transgenic plants is turning out, that they receive from the biotech companies, is turning out not to match what they're discovering when they do testing several generations later or many, many years later. So in Europe, they tested, in France, they tested five transgenic lines. In Belgium, they did another set. And they found not only were they not the same, but some of the ones in Belgium were not the same as the ones in France, even if it was supposed to be the same line. So this indicates that over time, the genomes are actually evolving. They seem to be responding to the presence of the foreign DNA. And the changes, in some cases, what's happened is deletions of DNA. In other cases, duplication of DNA. What this can do is produce gene silencing. It can also turn on genes that shouldn't be turned on in cells. So it really raises questions about any safety testing that was done in the beginning when they were approved. Is it relevant to what's out there in the fields, to what we're actually consuming?
So it's sort of like working with a mechanical model. Oh, there's this part that we're just modifying, and it can be isolated, but in fact, it's an organic process, and there's an interaction. Once you make one modification, it begins to affect a whole system in ways that we don't really know.
Yes, yes. One of the big concerns is that they're working with antibiotic resistance marker genes so that they can douse the little cells in the petri dish to figure out which ones have been transformed and have become transgenic. And if it's resistant to an antibiotic put on the cells, then they know those are the ones that have taken and they're the ones that they should grow out and develop new crop lines. But those antibiotic resistance genes now are in the plants. And the big concern is that when we eat these crops that have those antibiotic resistance genes in them, do they then, those antibiotic resistance genes get transferred to bacteria in our mouths, in our guts, in our stomachs? And then if they are now in the bacteria that are the good bacteria that we need for digestion, if they are sitting there in resident in our bodies, if a pathogenic bacteria enters our bodies and we become ill, will that antibiotic resistance gene then be transferred to them as well? Because bacteria exchange genes. They do a lot. That's how antibiotic resistance spreads. So there's a great deal of concern about that. And the British Medical Association and the Food Safety Authority in Europe both have called for moratoriums on any crops that contain this antibiotic resistance marker gene, and it's in virtually everything in North America. So it's a very serious problem.
Let's look at the second step. We've got this food product. It's genetically modified, and we take and do animal tests with it. What are the impacts? What kind of things have been learned about the impact on, I assume it's probably mice, rats, whatever, yeah, normal scientific guinea pig?
There have been studies with mice, rats, pigs, and to a limited extent with cows as well. And what they're turning up, and these are the studies I mentioned before in all of these different countries, different feeding studies, what they're turning up is impacts on immune systems, impacts on the organs, particularly when they use young growing animals, young growing mice or rats or whatever. They discover that the organs do not develop as rapidly as they would in you know, in normal growth, impacts on hearts, brains, livers, spleens, thymus, key organs that are important to young growing animals. They're very, very concerned about impacts on immune systems. They're also seeing these lesions appearing in the intestines and the stomachs. Impacts on the cells and the linings of these organs that suggest a precancerous condition. It's sort of a deformation, proliferated growth of cells, this sort of thing.
So we've got the food, and it's modified in... It has responses and unpredictable characteristics there. We've got the feeding studies with animals. So then people might still say, a skeptic might still say, well, but what's the impact on the human? We haven't got evidence directly of that. What would be the scientific data in that regard?
Yeah, I find it really... disingenuous or really disturbing when advocates come back and say, well, look, we've all been eating it for, you know, so many years and there's no evidence that it's having any harmful effects. The first evidence of harmful effect actually occurred very early in 1989, and this was a group of people who had ingested an amino acid called tryptophan, and 39 people actually died afterwards after ingesting it for a period of time. Thousands became ill. The Centers for Disease Control in the United States estimated between 5 and 10,000 people became ill. When they tracked back, where was this tryptophan coming from? It was coming from a Japanese company, Shenko, what is it called? Well, it doesn't matter, in Japan. And what they discovered was what was different about the tryptophan being produced by this company was that they had genetically modified the bacteria they were using in order to produce the amino acid. And it was after that transformation that the problem started to appear. They never did figure out what the genetically modified bacteria were producing, whether it was the tryptophan itself or some other substance, metabolite or something, that was in fact toxic to people. And to this day, we don't know exactly what the what was causing the problem. In the year 2000, there was a form of insecticidal corn. The insecticide is called BT, or it comes from a little bacteria, soil bacterium. And in a corn, it was called Starling. It had been approved only for use in animal feed, not for human consumption. In the year 2000, it was discovered that it was present in food. That it was found in tortillas, and there was all cornflakes, all kinds of corn products were withdrawn from the market for a period of time just to get it off the shelves. When it was reported that it was out there, people suddenly began reporting strange illnesses after eating corn products, tortillas, enchiladas, this sort of thing. And there were a whole set of people who went into anaphylactic shock, which is a life-threatening condition, immune system reaction. It raised all kinds of questions about whether or not crops engineered in this way, the BT crops with this insecticidal element in every cell in the plant, are in fact safe for us to ingest. And many of the feeding studies with the animals are also with this variety. Was a year ago, in 2004, there was a group of peasants in the Philippines who were living near a field where they were growing BT corn. And when the corn flowered and the pollen was released into the air, people began to get sick, especially the elderly, infants, and young children. They began to develop gastrointestinal illnesses and respiratory problems. There was a virologist from Norway who has been studying genetic engineering. He heard about the illnesses, and he went and he collected blood samples, and they analyzed the blood of the people who had gotten sick, and they discovered they had antibodies to the BT toxin. That's not proof that it caused the illness, but it does raise some very serious questions about the need for further studies to see whether or not the release of the pollen is in fact dangerous for farmers, for example, living in the area.
There's a film being shown this Thursday, And it's called Future of Food, and you're going to be present to answer questions. Could you give us a little more details about the film and the showing?
The film is there have been a number of documentaries that have been done on genetic engineering. This is the best I've ever seen. It's very hard-hitting. It moves very fast and hits a lot of the issues and interviews a lot of people who've been quite, scientists and others who've been very active around this issue. It's starting on December 1st, but it will run in the theaters as long as there are you know, audiences. So I want to urge people not only to go see the film, but go see it during the first few days of the run. If you can't come for the opening night on the first, you know, in the next couple of days or whatever, because the more people who come, the longer it will run and more people will have a chance to see it. And then once you've seen it, tell others so that they go as well.
So that's at the Fifth Avenue Cinema, and it's at 7 o'clock on December 1st.
That's right.
Thanks, Pat. I've been speaking with Pat Howard. She's professor of communications at SFU. She's teaching courses on risk communication, especially the risks posed by genetic engineering of our food.